Welcome to NSPCC Learning, a series of podcasts that cover a range of child protection issues to hopefully inform, create debate, and tell you all about the work we do to keep children safe. At the heart of every podcast is the child's voice and how what they tell us informs the work we do.
Hi, and thanks for listening to the latest NSPCC Learning podcast. This week, we're talking about safer recruitment in education. Now, applying a safeguarding thread throughout the whole recruitment process is vital. Not only will it help recruit and retain the very best people for your school or college, but it will also ensure you're keeping children safe. I sat down with two of our senior consultants, Donya and Craig, to talk about the importance of safer recruitment in the education sector. Prior to working for the NSPCC, both worked extensively in the areas of HR and education. Donya has over 11 years of experience in HR consultancy roles, and Craig was a teacher for many years, working in senior leadership roles. We talked about what can go wrong when a safer recruitment process hasn't been followed, and the high-profile cases that have put education in the spotlight for the wrong reasons. But we also talk about how these cases have altered legislation around safe recruitment, in particular, making training mandatory. We discuss how safe recruitment training is key to bringing statutory guidance to life, how it provides a consistent message to schools and colleges. We talk about the range of NSPCC's training on safe recruitment and the relationship between our free resources, our online course and our face-to-face training. And, as always, we talk about the importance of the child's voice throughout. I began by asking Donya and Craig why safe recruitment is so important to schools and colleges.
Children deserve to have the best and the safest people in post in whatever setting that is. And naturally, schools, academies, colleges, they are predominantly there to serve the children, if you like. They are the people that are the priority there. And so having the right people in place is so important, and safer recruitment enables people to do that. It forces you to have a think about what is the messaging that we want to send here about this role? What is the key messaging about our school and about the culture that exists within our school? How can we make sure that we are attracting people who have the right values to work with children, who have the right attitude towards children? Because not everybody is right for that. Not everybody is right for that kind of setting. And I think that's certainly some of the learning that we've taken from past cases, that historically we haven't been thinking in that way. We haven't been asking people about their motivation for working in that field, and that has been a real downfall for us. We were naive in our thinking, and there's so many tools now that are available for people to really understand how they can think about it as a safer process and not just a process around compliance and ticking boxes.
And I would always ask, if you don't have a safer recruitment process, then how can you have a safer culture? Yeah. And I think that's really a really key question. Mm. And without that safe recruitment process, you know, a process starts right at the beginning of someone's employment, then how can you have that safer culture and ensure that the young people that are accessing the service are actually safe?
And also, how can you be sure that everybody else is thinking in the same way that you are? So you might be applying a safe process, but that doesn't mean that everybody else that's involved in recruitment is doing the same. And that's where actually having that process down on paper is really important, because it sets that it sets a precedent, it sets a standard that you're going to work to across the board.
Why is safe recruitment training mandatory?
Part of the reason is because we have taken learning from a number of sort of high profile cases that have come out over the years. Obviously the Soham murders being the big one that most people remember, and naturally because Ian Huntley worked within a school and was able to get a role within a school, it really sort of threw the education sector into the spotlight after that. And I think the difficulty for education was that they thought that they were doing everything right. They had quite a strong process in place, but the quality elements behind it is where they were really lacking. So they knew what they had to do, but they didn't really know in depth how to do that. And okay. I think that's part of the reason why safer recruitment training has become mandatory, because the statutory guidance can say this is what you should do, but it doesn't tell people how to interpret that guidance and how to bring it to life and to how to do that safely and in the best way that they can for children. And sure. That's the difficulty and the difference.
Mm. Yeah, and an example, just building on what Donya's saying, really, an example, if you take the case of William Vahey, working in the international schools at the South Bank School, and, you know, as a process from that serious incident that happened there, there was the review then of actually the processes around international checks and making sure that they were implemented, including that in the guidance, the statutory guidance, so that they take place.
Okay, so if anyone's listening and isn't familiar with that case, do you want to just give a brief overview, Craig?
So William Vahey was working on the international circuit, the international schools circuit, and he basically, for the time that he was based in the South Bank School in London, he was abusing a number of children. He would use intimidation of other staff members, because his wife at the time was quite high up in an organisation linked to the international school sector. But the reason that case is important and around the checks is because he was an American citizen, and actually he had got a conviction from when he was a teenager, a late teenager, about 18, 19, I think it was. And he, for abusing young boys. Basically, that conviction, he moved from where he was living at the time to another part of America, and that didn't go with him.
Right.
And then he was able to then train to be a teacher and then obviously work around the world with young people. So what was highlighted was actually if there was a system for making sure those checks in various countries are completed, then you're more likely to pick up if someone has got an allegation in another country.
Okay.
Obviously, there's, you know, that's only part of a process and should only be part of a process, because what could be illegal here may not be illegal somewhere else. So that's why it can only be part of a process.
Sure. But the safe recruitment training has got some really good advice on overseas checks,
yes,
and how to do that correctly.
Yeah, and I think that's another difficult part, and it's part of the reason why I think it's really important to make sure that training is used as well as just statutory guidance, because that's a perfect example of where the statutory guidance says you should do something around overseas checking, but really it leaves it at the school's discretion to decide how to apply that.
Right.
So we provide people with the sort of the guidance, the advice points for them to try and make a decision about what is the best way for us to do this in this case, what are the options that are available to us, and that's not something that's spelled out in the statutory guidance.
Craig, you might be able to answer this from a personal experience, having been a teacher for many years. What are the common mistakes or misunderstandings that schools and colleges make when going through the recruitment process?
I don't think it's necessarily a mistake, but I think slips can happen when a school is suddenly finding themselves in a position that they need a member of staff, and there's an urgency around having to fill that post, that vacancy. And sometimes it can be a bit of a panic because, there could be a number of things there, not necessarily just the timescales to allow the safe recruitment process to actually run its full cycle, but actually in terms of, you know, you might not have a strong field, for instance, or a number of applicants might be really quite low. When you're in those situations, it can be really difficult to have safe recruitment as a main focus of, or an important focus, not necessarily a main focus, but an important focus of the process, because, you know, you might just think, well, I've got to just get somebody
sure.
in. Which then, if you're in that panicky stage, you're not necessarily going to get the best candidate or most suitable candidate. If that is the case, you can go. Don't be scared to go to advert again and re-advertise and just allow yourself the time to do the process fully, because if you're not doing the safe recruitment process fully, you're leaving yourself completely vulnerable.
The way that we like to think about safer recruitment is how can we apply a safeguarding thread throughout the whole recruitment process? So thinking about recruitment more generally, you know, it starts at the point that you're planning, you're thinking about how are we going to market our role, and that's not spelled out in the statutory guidance. And I think that's one of the difficulties that I find when I'm working in the education sector, is that when I ask the question, how do you make your recruitment process safer for the children that you're working with, the answer is always, well, we do a DBS check.
Yes.
And that's, you know, that's understandable, because in the guidance there isn't a lot of depth behind, you know, how, what does the full process look like, and how does safeguarding apply to everything. And that's one of the really good things about the course. It really breaks it down into manageable chunks of, this is your full recruitment cycle, and these are the slots where we can start to apply safeguarding practice into your recruitment process. And I think that that's really useful for people to see.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that's as well, building on that, really important, where a face-to-face training session is also really important.
Yes, I was going to move on to that. Can we draw out some of the training with safe recruitment when you're face-to-face with?
I think a massive benefit to the face-to-face training, from my experience of delivering it, is actually the time that people get to really consider their personal circumstance, in terms, well, their school circumstance, and how this training can really come alive within their context, and having the trainer there to be able to speak to and actually put ideas through, and having that active discussion, is really, really beneficial for organisations, and they do find that really useful, and feel much more comfortable, I think, than to go away and have the conversations with potentially the senior leadership team and things like that, to really think about how they can implement these, the things that we've spoken about, the best practice we've demonstrated in the courses.
I think it really helps to have that sort of whole school community in one room, receiving the same message, and with the chance to have a conversation about what, you know, what key learning points have we picked up on here, and how does that apply for us. And the other thing is, we can make that course slightly more bespoke to their setting as well, so we can use some of their own materials, which is always going to be more useful for people, because it makes it much more real for them. But, you know, on the flip side, obviously, say with e-learning, it's much more accessible as well. And, you know, safer recruitment isn't, you know, at the top of the list for everybody every day in their jobs when they're working within a school. So, you know, sometimes we have to have that flexibility, and we have to have that opportunity for them to be able to take control of their learning as well. And some people would prefer that. So there's benefits to both, to both options, really.
Is there a nervousness around safe recruitment, do you find, in education?
I don't, I'll be honest, I don't think there is when we first go in. I think that actually through the day, people tend to think, oh, actually, yeah, we could be tighter on doing that check, or we could look at that practice again, and that makes absolute sense. Because I think it's very easy for school, because this is part of a process, that schools can become really quite complacent in their practice, and, well, that's the way we've always done it. Okay, but that doesn't mean that necessarily it's the best way. And I think that sometimes, I don't know about you, Donny, but I've had it where, you know, you've, at the end of the day, you've got a few people with questions, because they're like, they can feel a bit panicked, and it's about, don't be complacent with all areas of safeguarding.
I think the thing that I find is that people come into the training with no expectations, really.
Right.
I think this is one of those things that comes with the fact that it is a mandatory training requirement that's set out in statutory guidance. So people are told that they have to go onto this training, and so they come along because they've been told to do it. And then what I get is, we'll take a break in the morning, and people come up to me and they go, this is actually really interesting.
Yeah.
And I just had no idea that that's what we could and should be doing. And it's so actually exciting to see that there's more that we can do with our recruitment process, and how we can make it safer, and how it can be a really positive experience for everybody. And I think that's the thing that I definitely notice when I'm doing the face-to-face courses. People come with no expectations whatsoever, and then they leave, you know, with a smile on their face and a to-do list, like Craig said,
right,
a mile long. But obviously, you know, then the beauty there is, we can refer them on to our NSPCC Learning website, because there's so many free resources on there that they can use, and we can point them in that direction throughout the course. So we don't just sort of leave them with a list of things to do. They know that they've got things there from us afterwards as well.
Follow up with, yeah, brilliant. Yeah. Could we talk a little bit about the e-learning course? Because you have both acted as consultants on that course. Have you been able to use some of your experiences from the face-to-face training and add it into the e-learning course?
Yeah, absolutely. I think every time that we work with a school or a college and we are doing that sort of bespoke, creating that bespoke course for them, we take learning ourselves from their situations, and we take learning from what they're saying to us throughout the day. Without that, we wouldn't know what it is that people need in that e-learning course. So we can take that forward and apply it. So a lot of the scenarios that we use in the courses, the sort of dialogue that you hear is actually based on real life cases that we've worked on. It's not something that we've just sat and made up. We want that to be as real as possible for people, and the way to do that is to use what is actually happening for schools now.
And the evaluation process from the face-to-face sessions as well help us to know that we are pitching things right. Having all of that sort of information allows us, when we do consult on things like the e-learning, that actually we've got that in our mind, or we've already looked at it from a face-to-face point of view, and can that be something that can be implemented, or would it work in an e-learning process?
And I think some of the things that we have to think about as well is, you know, with this being an e-learning course, how can we make sure that we can get as much of that really valuable information from the face-to-face courses into an online training environment? Because, you know, that does come with its limitations, but we want to make sure that we can get the best information in there. And so we do spend time having a think about not only the evaluation information. So we obviously read that ourselves after the courses, but we come together to have discussions about what needs adapting. And then in our planning for the actual content, we can then, like Craig said, pull that in and think about how we can get those messages out there.
And because we do actually cover a wide range of different education establishments, so not just primary schools or independent schools, but, you know, literally the whole sector, whoever would want to, you know, receive the face-to-face, we get a real diverse, audience and a diverse feedback.
And I think that's a challenge, actually, coming on to that, because I think historically across the education sector, there's been so many different ways of working when it comes to thinking about safeguarding and safer recruitment. Everybody, because there's different pieces of guidance and people have been left to interpret that in their own way, there is no consistency in thinking. And I think that again is a real beauty of the course, because it brings a consistent message regardless of the institution or setting that you're in. These are the fundamental points that you should be working to for safer recruitment. You know, across the board, there are no variations there, and I think that makes it much easier for people to digest. There's less sort of noise around the messaging.
And the course is really, it's in bite-sized chunks, isn't it? It's really accessible, it's really digestible. So should people maybe take the course, but then if they feel they need more, is then a natural progression for them face to face? They can have some more bespoke training that is pertinent to their school or college.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I find that a lot, actually. You know, I was doing some training recently, and half of the group had done our online e-learning course, and they had found it really beneficial, and then they'd had that conversation themselves to say, okay, well, how can we make sure that this is a consistent message within our school community, and get the interpret this in a bit more depth and make it a bit more tailored to us? And then they contacted us and asked us to come in and sort of further that learning experience for them, so it can be used in that way.
It feeds back into the free resources that we have on NSPCC Learning. We produce something, we find out from our audience what they want, how they want it, and that feeds back into the rest of our content, and we kind of start again.
Absolutely, and, you know, often as well, people will sit the e-learning course and then say, actually, we want to know more about that, but also a certain aspect, or we have a gap in our, say, for instance, our policies, where actually we would like some more advice and work with that. So not only does it necessarily lead on to the face-to-face training, but it may also lead on to an organisation wanting some consultancy as well. Yeah. So, it is a good way.
It's all part of a journey, really, yes. Isn't it? And it's their journey, you know, it's not something that we're putting onto them. It's them going along that journey in their own time and taking that learning themselves and then deciding what is right for them. And we just make sure that we have something, some kind of product, some kind of service that will cater to any need, really. And even if there isn't something that we've already thought of, that's what our team is here for. You know, people come to us with whatever their issue is, and if we don't already have a solution, we work with them to create that solution.
Great. Yeah, and obviously, because of the organisation that we're part of, what we do is always, we see as being best practice.
Yes.
And we would always recommend what is best practice, which some schools and colleges could think, oh, well, that's quite full on. But actually, it's from having such a history in the area that we learn from that. Previous events and things like that, and actually being able to go to the organisation, various teams within the organisation, to get information from, allows us to inform our practice and ensure that what we do is that best practice.
Yeah, I think the NSPCC has such a rich history around the field of creating safer organisations. We have so much that we can draw on, and we're constantly learning and evaluating in that field. So I think we really pioneered the thinking around creating safer organisations, and safer recruitment is just one part of that.
What advice would you give to schools on how to recruit safely?
If it's one piece of advice, I would say make sure that you give yourself enough time to be able to complete the recruitment process fully without rushing, so therefore you're less likely to make any of those slips or mistakes that we've spoken about earlier. So whilst you may feel that you've got to rush the process and have a deadline to get somebody in post, you know, there's always going to be alternatives to, until that has run its course.
Sure.
So, I would say the time is a big factor.
I think from my perspective, from a HR perspective, recruitment has always been thought about as a marketing tool. So when you're going out to recruit, people are often thinking, how can we sell ourselves? How can we make ourselves attractive to people so that we get candidates applying? And my advice would be to balance that thinking, because you need to be thinking about the risk as well as marketing. So what is the risk in our recruitment? And a lot of schools don't think about this. They think we're selling the role, and they don't think about the vulnerabilities that they're opening up in the way that they are selling the role. So make sure that they're presenting the role and the school and their approach to protecting children in the right way, so they can really balance that messaging between safeguarding and selling.
Yes.
That would be my advice.
Great. And what's quite interesting about safe recruitment in education training is, I guess when I traditionally think of recruitment, it's how you get the right person for that job, which is correct. But actually, a lot of the training in safe recruitment is how to deter the wrong person from that job. And I guess that's quite an important element of this training.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's that message that people don't think about, because people don't like to think about that, do you? You don't like to think about that. It's not nice, but it is a very real issue at the moment. We know that people who are looking to harm children will actively seek out roles that give them an opportunity to have access to children. So anybody who is working in a setting with children is a potential target for those people. And, you know, fundamentally, that is what that safeguarding thread is that we're talking about, that runs throughout this course. We can use recruitment as an attraction tool. We can think about, you know, skills-wise, having the right person, but we also need to think about the vulnerabilities and putting the children first and making sure that that person is the safest person to work there or volunteer there.
How often does safer recruitment training need to be taken?
People ask this question a lot. There is nothing spelt out anywhere that says you must do your safer recruitment training every X years. Mm-hmm. That's just not the case. It's not in there anymore. So when we talk to people, we say to them, what you need to think about actually is that the world of safeguarding is a bit of an ever-changing beast. Mm. You know, there's constantly things that are coming up that we're taking learning from. There's constantly changes to legislation, to statutory guidance, and we can't predict when that's going to happen. So I think, you know, the William Vahey case that Craig talked about earlier is a perfect example of this. You know, when that happened, there was learning that was taken from the review, and there was best practice guidance that was applied to our e-learning. So we updated our content because we were constantly updating it whenever we need to, which meant that people could get those new messages.
Yes.
So I think it's really important to make sure that you think about doing it regularly, but also think about what your needs are. So if you're recruiting regularly, then you need to make sure that you're refreshing your thinking, because you're not constantly thinking about safer recruitment when you're in your jobs. That's not your day-to-day yeah. job, is it? So have a think about, actually, if I'm recruiting, let's refresh this knowledge. And that is, again, the beauty of the e-learning course, because you can dip in and out whenever you need to, and you don't have to do the whole thing. You can dip in and out of the different modules depending on what it is that you're going to be doing. So it really is flexible in that way.
And I think as well that with an important factor is making sure that you have enough people within your organisation trained to be able to sit on a panel.
Yes.
So if you do have to, you know, it's like basically building on what Daniel said, if you do, you know, find yourself in a busy time of recruitment, right, that you've got enough people to cover it, because as Donnie said, it's not always the forefront of your mind, sure, the safe recruitment thing. So, you know, it's easier. That's why the face-to-face training especially is good, because people, you know, if you can train 16 people in one go,
yes,
you're always going to have someone that you can pull on to sit on a panel to cover that requirement. From a school's point of view, if you've got your safe recruitment policy there, you should really state a time to say how often it's going to
yeah,
be.
Yeah, that's a good practice to...
Yeah, yeah, that's always yeah. going to be good practice.
Yeah. Mm. And I guess the safe recruitment course has resources at the end, checklists and yeah. templates that schools can... I'm sure a lot of schools have these already, but actually it's probably quite nice to have examples that you can, like you say, it's like an aide memoir that you can refer back to. You can kind of use them, see how yours compares to the one that the NSBCC training has. So I guess it's all helping to work towards making sure that you recruit safely.
Yes, yeah,
definitely.
Everything is about the child's voice that the NSBCC does. How are we ensuring that we've included the child's voice in our safer recruitment training in education?
Whenever we are planning the content for a course, and through all the work that we've done in understanding creating safer organisations and what the NSPCC considers as safer recruitment, we're thinking about that with the child as being sort of the end user. We're constantly pushing people to think about being child focused. So in your decisions that you're making, are you being child focused? Are you thinking about the children that at the end user, basically? So when you're recruiting to a position within a school or a college, the child is the end user in every single setting, and that's very easily forgotten when it comes to recruitment, because of thinking, okay, has this person got the right skills, have they got some experience in this field? And when we go in and maybe do an audit with schools, or maybe they've made a mistake in their recruitment recently, my challenge to them is always, have your decisions been child focused here? And in more cases than not, it's because something else has taken priority and they've lost sight of the children that they're actually working for.
So Craig, Donia, thanks very much for speaking to me.
You're welcome. You're
welcome, yeah.
And thank you for the sterling work you've done on the course.
Thank you for listening to this NSPCC Learning podcast. If you're looking for more safeguarding and child protection training, information or resources, please visit our professionals website at nspcc.org.uk/learning.